we're so happy that you have once again tuned in to the Gentlemanly Confabulation Podcast, this being our third edition of the podcast. And this is a big one, John. It's all about one of our favorite topics, whaling.
I know. How exciting is this? We're talking about whaling today, something that really strikes a chord in our hearts.
You know what's striking a chord in my heart right now is the unbelievably delicious scent coming off of your cigar.
Yes.
As I light mine up, please tell us all about it.
So here's what I'm smoking today. What I'm smoking is easily my all-time favorite cigar, and it is the Tabac Especial Negra Toro Maduro coffee-infused cigar by Drew Estate. Now, this cigar is a mild cigar. It's very dark wrapper, but don't be fooled. It is a mild cigar.
Don't be fooled.
Country of origin is Nicaragua. Has Nicaragua fillers, Nicaraguan broadleaf, and essence of rich Nicaraguan fair trade coffee infused into the cigar. This cigar, when you smell it, smells like heaven. It gives off such a wonderful smoke.
It smells like you're smoking coffee. Oh,
it's so good.
It's if you could sell this in a Starbucks, I'm telling you, Starbucks would just, the stock prices would all,
absolutely,
would just continue to go up from where it is right now, which is almost unheard of.
And the best part is it gives off so much smoke. So you're always surrounded by delicious smoke.
Which just always makes me so incredibly happy.
I know.
The second that you took like two puffs,
oh,
and it didn't even blow in my face. We're a good probably 4 feet away from each other, mm-hmm, in this, you know, just lovely and extravagant shed. And just the scent brought me right back to the last time that I had had one of these,
oh,
and made,
God,
me extremely jealous.
This is one of the few cigars where I would buy a box over and over and over again.
Well, and you have.
And I have.
And you have.
And I will continue to do so.
And if you don't, then I'm going to be really upset with you, so you need to.
So, James, what are you smoking today?
Sure. Well, right now I've got the Toronto Vault. This guy is a Robusto. Wrapper's Nicaraguan. Came also from Nicaragua. You know, this is a full-bodied, you know, I'm telling you, I've had maybe two or three drags. Getting a lot of salt and pepper on this one.
Really?
Definitely hitting the back of the throat more than anything else.
Mm.
Which, I mean, you can't always have a cigar that hits the back of the throat.
That's true.
But if you do, you're a lucky man. Definitely full-bodied. This guy's got an extremely oily, dark, rich wrapper that I'm excited about. I mean, it's kind of hard to get a real sense for the smoke quality and content because yours is just so delicious and overpowering.
It's
everything.
It's true. This is a very overpowering cigar.
This, you know, I'm glad that you're smoking that because not only are we talking about a lovely cigar that we love.
That's true.
Not only are we talking about a topic which enthralls us, but we're also today having a drink of something that we just absolutely love as well.
I know. This day keeps getting better and better. And today we're drinking a Paddy's Bee Sting whiskey. And what it is it's Irish honey infused Irish whiskey. It's delicious. So cheers.
Cheers. Yep, takes me back. Now, it's still pretty crisp outside.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I remember, I think we had this actually when it was pretty warm out the last time.
Yeah, I think I found it in like the summertime.
And you brought it over, and I thank you for that. You know, usually with these American honey or, you know, whiskey honey infused drinks, we typically keep it in the freezer, and that's the case with this. I bought it yesterday. Stuck it in the freezer overnight. Obviously, we've got it over a giant ball of ice because that's how we like our drinks.
It's true.
And it's just, it hits every note. Not too overpowering with the sweetness. Definitely taste, there is some whiskey in there.
Mm-hmm.
Patty's definitely, I think, our favorite.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it goes down easy. And the other thing that's really cool about it with a lot of these other Irish or with these other honey liquors is it'll taste like that 82-cent liquor you'll get in the store. And this tastes like, you know, it's got a little floral notes in it, like it's actual pollinated honey.
Which is fantastic.
It's amazing.
It's great. All right, well, let's just jump right into this, John, because there's no other way to really do it justice. Now, we are trying to tie this in with something that is going on this week, because we could have talked about this topic first.
Yeah.
Although we felt that would have been a little overpowering to anyone who doesn't know anything about us, because it's one thing just to jump in and try to understand us. Then it's a whole other thing to try to understand our interest in whaling, which is just an entirely I mean, first of all, most people are like, what, whaling?
Yeah, what is whaling?
Yeah, I don't know what that is. So the reason we're talking about it this week is that this coming Tuesday, which actually should be the day that you're going to listen to this.
Right, March 8th.
You are going to be able to purchase on DVD, home video. They probably don't make VHS. Maybe Betamax. We'll see. The digital download may already be available, but don't do it. In the Heart of the Sea.
Do not buy In the Heart of the Sea.
Don't do it. We've told you that, I think, in passing before, and we just told you emphatically what not to do this time.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about a little later why. Now, it has nothing to do with the source material, let's be clear.
No.
We are in love with the man who wrote the book, Mr. Nathaniel Philbrick.
Who is fantastic.
He writes a historical nonfiction book as if it is a novel. Which is what made it so. Basically, the whole idea of In the Heart of the Sea is that it is a nonfiction Moby Dick. Mm-hmm. Because the story of the whale ship Essex in 1820 inspired Herman Melville to write the story about Captain Ahab and his hunt for the great white whale. And that is actually a historical fact that you can find many different places, including a fantastic PBS documentary, which really is the movie version of In the Heart of the Sea. I believe it's called... In the deep?
Into the deep?
It's either into or in the deep.
It might be In the Deep.
But it's another fantastically produced PBS special that was fantastic. I believe, narrated by Mr. Willem Dafoe, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right, yeah, yeah.
So let's just jump right into whaling, John. Now, the reason that we can really share the love here is because of, again, our location.
Mm-hmm.
The preeminent and really, I think, only whaling museum that matters, other than the one that's on Nantucket, which
we need to go to.
Which we have to go to, so we can't talk that much smack about it. But
true.
In the lovely city of New Bedford, New Beige, as it's called, is the New Bedford Whaling Museum.
Yes, and that's New Bedford, Massachusetts.
That's correct.
Because, you know, we're worldwide.
Well, we're Mr. and Mr. Worldwide. We're the Misters Worldwide.
Misters Worldwide.
Not to be confused with Pitbull, the human, not the dog.
Right.
Which I abhor. Well, that's another topic, I suppose. Let's skip right over that. In any event, so New Bedford, for those of you who've never heard of this place or you know, don't know much about it, it certainly has seen better days in recent past. All of the trash can manufacturing plants have closed in and around the city,
yep.
Which is unfortunate because somebody thought that making metal trash cans in and around New Bedford was going to be a gold mine.
They
maybe
did.
30 to 40 years ago.
They really did.
They had never thought that, wow, there's this new thing called plastics, which is really going to make it a lot better.
They thought people were going to keep using metal trash cans.
They were totally wrong. Totally wrong. But the thing that the city is known for more than anything else is whaling.
Mm-hmm.
And now for those who aren't familiar with the history of whaling, we're going to do our best to, you know, kind of give you a little history here. Whaling, you know, there's evidence of whaling in human civilization going back to about 3000 BCE, before Common Era, or
yeah.
BC, if you'd like, the before the J-Man, either
right.
One. We don't discriminate.
I like the thought of BJ before J-Man.
Oh, that's, look, if we get any position of power based on this, which we're not going to, that's going to be the first thing we change. So, again, the evidence goes way, way back into human history, and there's some nice trucks going by the shed. I don't know if you could hear that, probably could. So clearly we're not out in the sea. Maybe we'll add some seagull sounds just at the beginning.
All right.
We'll see what we can do in post. take you out there. Maybe some bobbing, you know, buoys.
Some buoys?
Yeah, buoys.
A couple dinghies?
If we can get a couple dinghies. So anyway, the history of whaling here in the United States is really an interesting thing because in New England, really that was the number one business along with textiles for... at least the first probably 100-ish years of the Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that makes it so interesting is that it was really America that led the way in whaling, the first industry that was not created elsewhere and flourished elsewhere to a huge degree.
Right.
Whaling was it, John.
Yeah, whaling was our great American export. Whale oil, blubber, spermaceti. Which comes from the sperm whale. That's how they get their name.
That's correct.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it pretty much started with beached whales. The natives found out that, you know, they can strip them down of their meat. They'll have food. They'll have substance to light their areas due to the spermaceti and whale oils. And then us white folk decided, if we built some ships and we sailed off the coast, we could make a lot of money exporting this to other countries.
You go to where the whales are.
Right.
Which is exactly what they started doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the as you said, it started with just shore whaling.
Mm-hmm.
Then it went to basically dinghies mm-hmm. in harbors. And the boats and the ships kept getting progressively bigger and bigger. And, of course, as you kill more and more of these majestic, wonderful, gigantic animals, and they're smart, too, obviously. They're also mammals.
Right.
They figure out, well, maybe we shouldn't be going in these areas where all of our friends keep getting killed. It's like buying property in a very bad part of town.
Correct.
You quickly figure out that maybe you should move.
Right.
So that's exactly what the whales started doing. And their migratory patterns started changing. The areas where they were found started changing. So these whale ships started going, you know, first it was, okay, you went for an afternoon. Then maybe you'd go for a day. Then you'd go for a few months. By the end, some of these trips lasted, and we're not kidding, 6 years.
Yeah. That's a long time to be in sea.
Unbelievable.
With nothing around you. 6 years at sea. Not 6 years being docked in different places. 6 years at sea. Think of the things you miss.
Everything.
Especially during this time and age when America was rapidly growing. You're missing everything. You're missing the start of the country.
And there's no way to communicate at all back. I mean, if you sent Correct. Some letter at a port in, you know, around Cape Horn, or if you were, you know, in Tierra del Fuego, or you know, any of these South American ports, I mean, maybe you could get a letter back to a family member in 6 months to a year.
Right.
So maybe over the course of the voyage, if it went over a year, you could maybe send some correspondence, but it's unlikely that you're going to get anything back,
yeah.
ever.
Right.
So basically, when you say goodbye to your family, that's it. You're saying goodbye, and they understand that you may actually never come home, because besides it just being incredibly amazing that you're out that long, so God knows what could happen. It's also, of course, incredibly dangerous and taxing.
Right. I mean, you're facing scurvy. You're facing depletion of food and starvation, dehydration, because obviously, if you don't know this yet, you cannot drink the seawater.
And there's no Gatorade.
Salt.
No Gatorade. No.
There was no Gatorade.
They didn't even have Allsport on the ships.
There was no Florida Gators.
No.
That led to the invention of Gatorade.
Not yet. I mean, there was a Spanish possession, around. Maybe still. Well, it was parts maybe, but so these trips just kept. And you know, the other amazing thing about whaling, other than just the logistics of it, which we'll get into here in a little bit, was that these whalemen were often the first white people to show up in a lot of these, little islands in Polynesia
yeah.
and you know all over the Pacific islands, first time. So they were explorers in addition to being merchants.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, and that led to us, you know, we obviously depleted the whales in the Atlantic Ocean.
Absolutely.
There was no Panama Canal.
Had to go all the way around.
Right, so you had to go down the tip of South America.
Tierra del Fuego.
Into the Pacific, go back up towards where California is and the equator, and try and find whales there. Like, that is amazing. That is a huge journey.
That's why it took so long.
Right. But I don't think, and I think, first off, it's important that we mention, because we didn't in the beginning, that we are not for whaling now.
That's, well, modern whaling is abhorrent.
Right. Absolutely.
And the fact that it's still allowed by the Japanese government in mm-hmm. certain instances is just disgusting and completely unnecessary.
Correct.
Because the purpose that whaling served, which was basically, you know, anything that you did with baleen. Now, there's two kinds of whales. There are toothed whales, and there are baleen whales.
Correct.
The only big toothed whale that exists is our favorite whale.
Sperm whale.
All other major big whales, right whales, blue whales, humpbacked whales, all of those whales are baleen whales.
Yep.
And basically, baleen was the plastic of its time. Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned plastic trash cans. You could make a baleen trash can,
right.
Probably.
And they were also used for things like corsets for women. They were used for brushes for your hair. I mean, baleen was used for a lot. People needed baleen.
Absolutely.
We didn't have those little tiny like fibers.
No, we didn't
use baleen.
No, because we hadn't invented it yet.
Correct.
And amazingly, these gigantic animals who live in the ocean, who did nothing to man, ended up having everything man needed to make life better for himself.
Yeah.
Most importantly, of course, was the oil that was contained within the whale.
Correct.
And as John had mentioned earlier, the spermaceti oil that is only native to one, again, animal.
The sperm oil.
That oil was prized above all else because it burned longer and brighter than any other kind of oil. I think it was Benjamin Franklin who was one of the first Americans to talk in great detail about the advantages of spermaceti oil. Because at that point, the sperm whale hunt hadn't really gone into the kind of effect that it did in the golden age of whaling, which existed from around probably 1815, 1820 to 1850 before the Civil War.
Yeah.
By the time of the Civil War, whale oil was obsolete, out of date, because they had started having the oil strikes in the Pennsylvania oil country, which now, of course, doesn't exist, although maybe they're doing fracking there now. Because if there's oil, if there's liquid oil, there's probably, you know, shale oil.
Yep.
But again, the golden age of whaling, let's say about 1820 to 1853.
Yeah, fair.
Just to give you an idea, in 1853, as a statistic here, the whaling industry brought in about $11 million in that day and age's money. Now, if you use inflation, that's about $345 million. And again, the hotbeds for whaling were along the East Coast. They were New Bedford and Nantucket.
Mm-hmm.
For the earliest parts, it was really Nantucket.
It was Nantucket.
But then, after trains started to be utilized, it was simpler and easier to use New Bedford because New Bedford is a port that is connected to land. So you could therefore connect a train to the city and then send the oil anywhere.
Well, that and also New Bedford had a deeper harbor. You could not get in to dock your whale ship in Nantucket. Nantucket is an island, if you do not know this. And there's a huge sand barge around the island. So what you'd have to do...
Navigate.
Is you'd have to essentially throw anchor in the ocean, far away from the island of Nantucket.
And you'd have to stock and dock it from the dock with dinghies and other ships to get out there.
And that's a lot of work. Once you start going into brass tacks, now you have to pay these dinghies to go get...
What? The, brass tacks?
You have to pay these dinghies to go get the oil. Right. So, New Bedford, logical place.
Completely. So, you know, John and I had very high hopes for the movie In the Heart of the Sea.
Well, because...
It was based off...
The book, In the Heart of the Sea, by Nathaniel Philbrick, was amazing. And this was real life. There was so much drama that happened.
You couldn't, if you wrote it as a fiction, it would probably be denied by publishers because, well, if Moby Dick had never existed as a novel, let's say that first, because the story of the Essex is, of course, based on, or Moby Dick is based the basis on, for the story in the heart of this, well, for Moby Dick.
Yes.
And the true story is in the heart of the sea. And, you know, it's not, obviously there's no Captain Ahab, there's no Queequeg, there's no Starbuck, anything like that.
Correct.
But the basic idea is the same, is that a whale totally destroyed this ship. And what's even more unbelievable is that the guys who were on this whale ship, who are at least, I forget if it was 2,500 or 4,000 miles off the coast of South America.
I think they were 3,000 miles away.
Perfect. See, right in the middle there, sweet spot. They managed to cobble enough stuff together for most of, well, for some of them to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the survival rate was not very good because they basically took the whaling boats, which they would take on Nantucket sleigh rides.
Yep.
John, what's a Nantucket
sleigh ride? A Nantucket sleigh ride would be when you see a whale breaching, you drop down your little sailboats, or not sailboats.
Whaleboats.
They were whaleboats, you know, using your oars. You paddle over to the whale. You spear the whale. The whale then gets startled. It dives as far down as it can.
Strange it would get startled.
Right. Well, I mean, it just got speared.
That's right.
Nobody likes to get pricked.
Look, speared? Did the professional wrestler Goldberg ever spear a whale?
Did he ever face Earthquake? Because I think that was...
I'm not even going to lie. I was just thinking about Earthquake. So if it was Seaquake, then he could have done it. All right, continue.
All right, so, you know, you spear the whale. The whale dives down as far as it can to try and get away from the pain. Now, whales cannot stay underwater.
Forever.
Forever.
But
they
hours.
Need, right, but hours they could. But they need to come up and get air. So
they're mammals.
You have these miles and miles and miles of rope in your boat, knowing that the whale is going to dive. When the whale breaches back up, you see that the whale is however many miles away, you know, it pulls you. And that is the Nantucket sleigh ride.
I mean, so you're talking basically, but if you saw a breach, maybe you rode out a mile or two to get to the whale. Mm-hmm. If you successfully harpooned the whale, you could be at least anywhere from 4 to 6 miles away from the ship.
Yeah, some people were 20 miles away with a whale.
Alone in the middle of the ocean.
Right. That you have to now tow a dead whale. So when the whale breaches, comes back up to the top, now you have all these guys with spears and you're just spearing the whale over and over again until it dies. Okay, so now the whale's dead. It's floating at the top. Now you have to row your boat 20 miles back to the ship.
With a giant whale.
With a giant whale.
Yes. Talk about fishing.
And that took hours. Hours to do this.
And it's not like it ended there, because then, after you got it connected to the ship, you then have to render the whale.
Correct.
And this is another amazing thing that really makes whaling on the forefront of American industry, is that they were able to create a ship that not only was the vessel to get you to the product, but that could create would completely create all of the elements that you needed to take back with you. Again, unfortunately for the whale was created or designed or evolved in such a way that everything you needed to render the whale existed within the whale. You didn't have to take anything with you, John.
It was a floating factory. And you and I have both been on a whaling ship, the Charles Morgan. And, you know, they're big ships, but they're not huge. Sometimes they were the size of the whale themselves.
Or not much bigger.
Right. So now you have this whale hooked up to the side of your ship.
You're cutting the blubber.
Right, you're cutting the blubber. You know, think of it like scaffolding. People that are cleaning windows. You drop down on the side of the ship, you're cutting the whale.
Great analogy.
I thought so. And, you know, you're hoisting up the blubber into, one of my favorite things, the Tryworks, which was a giant metal oven on the ship. On a wooden ship. And there were not a lot of ship fire. I thought more ships would catch on fire.
Amazingly not.
No.
And the most amazing thing about it is that, so obviously you would start the fires with, let's say you had not yet killed a whale.
Correct.
You would start the fires with wood, basically. Mm-hmm. But after you began rendering the whale, now just again, think that these are giant stoves, basically.
Yeah.
And there are giant pots, and you're throwing the blubber in there because you're trying to reduce it so that only the oil is left. At some point, you get, if you're doing this, the pieces of the blubber become, I think they're called cracklins.
Yeah, cracklins.
And the cracklins were then taken, like embers the embers, basically, except because they're made of the whale, because they've got oil leached into them, they then helped to cook and process the whale much better than could have been done,
right,
even if you had a forest next to you.
It's amazing that you used the whale to render the whale. Like you said, you start it with wood. As soon as you get some cracklin, you're throwing the cracklin.
It's now, a one-stop shop.
Right. And I think that's what's so fascinating to us is the history behind this, how it was all done, that these things were floating factories. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
I mean, again, to be totally clear, the actual process and idea of killing a whale for no reason is terrible.
Right.
We would never want to do it. We would never actually want to go be whalers.
Correct.
But, that being said, the fact that in this time period, with the technology they had, and also you got to remember that, they didn't have any GPS.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have anything that was powered. It's not like they had, you know, they didn't have powered harpoons.
Correct.
The power that they had were in their arms.
Yeah.
To throw these harpoons deep enough to do damage to a whale, which is completely insulated in blubber, so that it can go thousands of feet below the surface of the ocean.
Well, and again, whaling was necessary at this time period. It fueled America and the rest of the world. Whaling oil was used for everything, along with the baleen.
Correct. And, you know, it became such a gigantic industry in New England that for a time, when New England was not happy with the rest of the United States, mm-hmm. there was talk about a northern secession.
Correct. A lot of people don't know that.
No, a northern secession. Before there was a southern secession, there was going to be a northern one.
Mm-hmm.
Because what ended up happening in the War of 1812 was that, you know, these merchants in New England were selling all of this whale product everywhere. And they were afraid that the war would do real damage to the economy.
Correct.
So they didn't want to go to war with Britain
no.
in 1812.
No.
So there was serious talk about Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, New Hampshire. I don't know if Vermont existed yet, or Maine. Mm. I think Maine was 1822, I want to say, so I'm not sure if it did. May have been just part of Massachusetts then. That's part of the research I didn't do. But anyway, all these New England states, and even New York, didn't want to do it because this was such a major industry for them
right.
that they were terrified of losing the business to any long, played-out war that was going to happen.
Yep. Yep. Well, I think since we're both getting a little worked up over the whaling, it's time for a little cigar update.
Can I go first?
You can go first.
All right. So I'm just about halfway done. Has mellowed out, still getting a lot of the pepper, but it's starting to be a little bit more full-bodied.
Hmm.
More of a profile, definitely. Again, the smoke from yours is so overpowering and so delicious that I'm jealous that I don't have one, and I'm probably going to have to take a puff of yours.
Hey,
at some point,
that's fine by me.
Which, by the way, as long as you're drinking alcohol and the other person you're smoking a cigar with doesn't have some terrible communicable disease,
mm-hmm.
it is completely acceptable to share.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Don't be a stingy, stuck-up man. Who works construction and has calluses all over the place.
Wearing your Dickies and your
right.
steel-toed boots.
Right. No, it's perfectly acceptable to share a delicious cigar to say, hey, my cigar is so fantastic, you got to try this out. So next time we both get this cigar.
Because then you're going to hook somebody.
Correct.
Or now, they don't have to be as big as a whale.
No.
Because that would be whaling. Fishing? I don't know. I'm getting a little... Anyway. Yeah. All right, so tell me... I mean, yours is still obviously fantastic. There's no doubt about
know,
this.
We've had this one many times. I knew it was going to be a mild cigar. Week 3, another mild cigar. It's so good. I mean, if you are breaking into cigars, this really is the way to go. Drew Estate just does such a fantastic job with their infused cigars. And you get that coffee smell. You don't get that harsh tobacco smoke all over the place that's really going to stink up your clothes and everything else. It's a nice, subtle coffee. Now, yes, it's still going to stink because...
It's a cigar.
Right, it's a cigar. But... It smells delicious. It smells like coffee.
And you know who's really going to appreciate that? Is my wife, who I forgot left her shoes in this shed to try to clean them out and air them out for the night. So she's going to be very excited when she comes home later and finds out that her shoes smell like coffee smoke.
Well, at least it's coffee.
We may have to blow them directly. I may have to blow directly into the shoes just to try to help her out.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I'm a good husband. Clearly.
So I guess back to whaling.
That's right. So we've kind of gone over the golden age and everything that's amazing about it. Of course, like any good thing, and by good thing I mean thing that was productive for the economy and mm-hmm. not the idea of which is abhorrent, it has to come to an end. And just like in life, a better technology, whether that's a newer iPhone or iPod or computer
yep.
or video game system, there's always something better coming along. In general.
Right.
And so what came along, as I had referenced earlier, was oil, as we think of oil, that being the dark, black, there will be blood kind of oil, which, by the way, what a fantastic movie.
I thought it was a great movie.
We love Daniel Day-Lewis.
Daniel Day did a great job.
I mean, nobody else could have been Lincoln.
I want to watch that movie again.
I
both of those, Lincoln and There Will Be Blood.
I had just watched, last weekend actually, after we did our podcast, I watched There Will Be Blood.
Huh.
And then that made me want to watch Lincoln.
Makes sense.
Go figure.
Makes sense.
I was also in the mood for Last of the Mohicans.
Ooh. Another solid choice.
Exactly. All Daniel Day. All day. All day
Daniel All day Daniel Day.
That would be a really good, if he were a sports person.
Yeah.
And actually, this is a great, no, it's not really a great segue, but it's a segue. Talking about sports, John and I, as you've come to find out through this elaborate talk about whaling history, we're aficionados of history. And there's one character in American history whom we just can't get enough of, and that will be, I'm sure, a topic for another day, an entire topic that we'll probably have to get the, really, in our lives, the quintessential expert in all things TR.
That is true.
Which is my father, Mark, who, you know, he basically has forgotten more things about TR than we know.
Yeah.
And we know a lot.
That's a fair point.
So Theodore Roosevelt, of course, is an amazing, he's the embodiment of an imperial America, mm-hmm. which we have become in the last, you know, century and going on a half. So you're wearing a shirt from the Frisco Rough Riders, which is a minor league baseball team from
Texas. Frisco, Texas.
Frisco, Texas. I don't know which, I think maybe they're affiliated with the Rangers. Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. Their mascot is...
is Teddy Roosevelt.
But not only is it just TR, it's TR when he was with the Rough Riders.
I know. They're the Frisco Rough Riders.
It's unbelievable. I forget how I stumbled upon this a week and a half ago.
But I'm glad you did.
It is unbelievable. We are going to... I'm going to be decking myself out in so much Frisco Rough Rider gear because it's got a cartoony TR as the mascot.
With a baseball bat.
And he looks amazing.
He does look amazing. If now, I don't like baseball.
No.
I don't care for baseball at all. But if you love TR, which I'm assuming you do because if you're listening to our podcast, you probably love Teddy Roosevelt.
Or you've heard me talk about him.
Correct. Go out and check out the Frisco Rough Riders. Buy a shirt because it is awesome. More people need to be wearing Frisco Rough Rider stuff.
Hashtag Frisco Rough Riders. We're going to get that trending.
It's true. I think so.
Well, I mean, after the podcast last week, I was followed, and I think you are.
I was followed.
By Radio Shack.
Yeah.
So we do want to give a shout-out to Radio Shack for helping us get a cable to allow us to do a better podcast for all of y'all.
And shout-out to Radio Shack for still being open.
And we made a little bit of a slight saying we should contact them by fax. They said that actually we should have used
Morse code.
Morse code, which is another great historical reference, which we loved.
Fantastic. Radio Shack's doing such a good job.
They're really, somebody in their social media department deserves a raise.
Absolutely.
Well, for figuring that out.
If they can give raises.
Well, you know, they did close a lot of stores, so they may have a little extra cash floating around. And it was a great experience. They had what we needed.
And the headquarters of Radio Shack, Texas. So Frisco Rough Riders, Radio Shack, Texas.
It all comes back.
And it all goes full circle.
So, John, what else about, you know, you mentioned we had an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
Was that last summer or summers ago?
I think that was last summer. Last summer, the Charles Morgan, which is docked in Mystic Seaport, Connecticut, came up to New Bedford as part of, like, its final voyage thing. They refurbished it.
Wasn't it the 150th anniversary?
It was the 150th anniversary.
There we go.
And it came up to New Bedford and to the port. We went into the Charles Morgan. And, you know, I think it's somewhat important I talk about the ship. Because, like I said, the ship was not huge. And they had a fairly large crew, like 20 people, I'd say.
Something like
probably.
That.
Probably. Yeah. And we went into the, you know, the sleeping quarters and stuff. And it is cramped. Those ceilings are maybe like 5'3".
And granted, you know, people were shorter and not as fat then.
Correct.
But still, my father, who was just recently referenced, Mark, he's about 6'1", 6'2". I mean, he had some serious trouble navigating around.
Well, and to think that's where people were staying. And then, because whaling ships did not discriminate, there was a lot of African Americans upon whaling ships.
Absolutely.
It was
that was a lot of, you know, slaves who found their freedom ended up on whaling ships because there was always... One of the big things about whaling was is that if you were just one of the guys working on the ship, there was a lot of turnover because it was such a difficult thing to do. So, and also, they would have a lot of turnover because if you're halfway into a two-year voyage, sometimes you would basically go AWOL and end up on some tropical island somewhere, or go to a city or a port that you were in because you were just like, that's it, I'm done with this, I'm sick of it.
Right.
So it was a great way to, you know, it was not, it was definitely not good for making any money.
No, no.
That's something that's important to correct. Also get to here. Correct. Is that really the only people making any money were the people who owned the ship.
Yep, the captain.
The captain and maybe the first mate.
Correct.
And that's about it.
Right. And the thing is, and, you know, it was genius for the people that owned the ship. It was terrible for the people working on the ship, is that you don't know how long you're going to be at sea for.
Because you got to fill it.
Right. You can't take luggage upon luggage upon luggage. But what they did have on the ship was a little convenience store where you could buy clothes, you could buy food. And
it was like a college bookstore.
Yeah, essentially. And much like a college bookstore, the prices of the things on that ship...
completely controlled by the people who own the ship.
Right.
Totally overpriced.
Completely overpriced.
Yeah!
Let's say for a pair of pants was like $100 US in that day and age when you're making probably like 5 cents a day. So when you get off that ship, a lot of times people had to owe money to the people who own the ship. And therefore, you have to go back out on another ship, which you're going to end up owing more money again.
It was really, it was almost like a pyramid scheme.
Absolutely.
It was, Bernie Madoff would have been a whaler, I think is what we're getting at.
Mm. Yeah, he would have owned a whaling ship.
He would have had, well, definitely. He wouldn't have worked on one, that's
no,
for sure.
No, no. But, yeah, I mean, it was such a different time period to, and you know, that was another big point, is that slaves got their freedom that way. And a lot of them did end up becoming decently wealthy. They made a good living from whaling. A lot of people did make good livings. You know, not everybody ended up thousands of dollars in debt. A lot of them did. But, you know, it was an industry that fueled the U.S.
It did. And that's, again, why we find it such a captivating mm-hmm. topic. Because, you know, in American history, learning American history just as most people would, there's probably some mention of whaling.
Yeah, but you can't really talk about it because...
well, because it's not a PC thing to talk
hashtag
about.
Hashtag PETA.
Can I just also... let's go on a tangent again. Let's talk about the most disgusting PETA protest I ever saw in my life. Now, first of all, let me just say again, as I'll probably say many times during the course of doing these, I have no problem at all if people want to be vegetarians, be vegans.
Correct.
As long as you're living your life, are having a good time living your life, there's no implement or impetus that's stopping you from living your life, that's what makes America great, is that you can literally be yourself.
Yep.
As crazy as you want to be, as long as it's within the confines of the law, and obviously sometimes the law is restrictive and not allowing you to do everything you want.
Correct.
But that's, I think, changed quite a bit, certainly socially, in the last 15 to 20 years, which is great.
It is.
But sometimes you just need to tone it down a little bit when it comes to this PETA stuff.
Mm.
Because I think I've mentioned before, I used to live in Des Moines, Iowa. Obviously, Iowa is a farm, a lot of ag. And also pork is, I think, between farming, which would be, you know, corn and soybeans, and pig farming, those are the two really huge things.
Yeah.
And obviously, that makes it a target for PETA, because they don't like anything to do with that. And, you know, certainly, are these conditions that you would ever want to really keep yourself or your family? No. Do you want to eat pork and bacon because it's delicious? Naturally. Do you want the price to be ridiculous? No. So there's going to be some kind of a trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going and getting Baconators, that Baconator with the delicious parts has to come from somewhere.
Right.
And you don't want to pay $8 for a Baconator. So, thus you have factory farming. Now, PETA would protest often in Des Moines. Sometimes I remember lettuce bikinis were big. Because, you know, they're always about making a spectacle.
Yep.
And the spectacle I remember the most is, I forgot what particular, I think they were protesting hog confinement. And I'm not kidding. It was like winter, like February or March in Des Moines, which is cold, very cold.
Very cold.
There was a pregnant woman covered in fake blood in a cage outside. And it was absolutely terrifying. How that's going to convince anyone to not want delicious bacon, I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know what goes through people's head. And we'll probably get chastised from some people from PETA.
Which is perfectly fine.
Because probably this will be what they listen to, because it says whaling.
Yes. Well, then, obviously, we're terrible people now.
Right.
We love whaling. We love hog confinement. we're terrible, awful people for saying this.
Well, and that's what it comes down to. We love the history of the United States of America. Whaling is such a huge part of getting America kickstarted.
And a completely, I think, underspoken about and and not very well understood.
Because I don't think you can anymore. Like, you can't go telling these... How do you watch a video on whaling without showing a whale being killed? You can't do it.
Well, and there aren't many videos of that.
No.
Because basically, for all intents and purposes, I think the last whaling ship to leave New Bedford was in like 1920 or mm-hmm. something like that. And then ironically, I think it got caught in a storm right off the coast of Massachusetts and got destroyed in a bunch of rocks, thus ending American whaling forever. And that's fine. It had to end. I'm not saying that it should still be going on.
No.
And certainly not modernized in the way that...
No, absolutely
because
not.
Now, whaling across the world continued for decades after that.
Yep.
In Russia, in China.
Norway, right?
Norway.
Yep.
And they used modern equipment to kill whales. In some of these modern whaling situations, every year, they would kill 50,000 whales.
Yeah.
And completely depleted the populations.
Correct.
To the point where humpback whales were endangered, sperm whales were endangered. All of these majestic animals whose sole purpose for so long was making life better for people, like any other animal apparently is.
Yep.
But there was no purpose for it, really, because anything that could be done from a whale was starting to be done by other things.
Right.
And by the 60s, plastics were obviously a well-developed technology.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't need baleen. You didn't need spermaceti. Everybody had electric light or, you know, had homes powered by oil and propane and things like that.
Right.
Natural gases that come from the earth, not something you get from a whale. So it was just totally impractical and silly in the very last stages of, I guess, mass whaling, if you say... You know?
It was people just trying to keep it alive, just trying to get any last penny out they could.
But I don't know anybody like that.
No,
who would do that?
No, not one person. But that's the thing is, if you're hunting just to hunt, like these people that are hunting whales just to kill whales, that's completely wrong. That should not be allowed. Japan should not allow it. Should not be allowed in Norway. I think that's what, or no, is it Finland?
It's one of the Nordic countries, or was one of the Nordic countries.
And it's just...
I think they actually stopped. I think it's just Japan now.
But, it was necessary at the time. It's not necessary anymore. And to go out with this modern technology to hunt whales...
Devastating.
...is deplorable.
Absolutely. John, we're just about to the end of our cigars.
We are.
Well, let's give a little flavor profile.
Well, I mean, mine is still deliciously coffeed. It's... We've built up a nice smoke in this cabin. It's hazy. It's hazy now.
Well, that's because of the delicious smoke mostly coming off of yours.
Right, but I don't think we've gotten it this hazy before.
No, it's true. It does produce a lot of smoke, which is nice.
It does. If you love smoke, if you love a smoky cigar, this is the cigar for you.
And I'm going to have to pick up my wife's shoes and have you blow in them.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Will do.
There's nothing weird about that.
But yeah, I mean, Drew Estate, Tabac Especial Toro... Fantastic. Pick one up. Get it immediately.
The Vault by Toronto
mm-hmm.
definitely mellowed out the last half. Not getting nearly as much spice as before. Still a nice, easy smoke. I had a V-cut on mine. I know you had a V-cut on yours.
Oh, I did have a V-cut, yeah.
Another good thing about the Toronto is this is a quote-unquote value cigar, meaning that you're not going to be paying, again, that much per stick. So I think if you want a nice smoke and you want to fill up your humidor with some of these, I would recommend it. I'd keep it in the vault, ready
Good,
to go.
Good, I'll have to try it because we did get that in our
Cigar
of the Month
pack.
Club.
That's right.
So I guess to end this whaling thing before we say goodbye, I just want to tell you guys, check out the New Bedford Whaling Museum. They did a fantastic job. It's beautiful in there. There's a lot of historical stuff.
There's a replica of a whaling ship, which is actually, I found out, the largest model ship in the world. It's basically an entire wing of the museum.
That's awesome. Yeah, but I mean, check it out. James and I love it. We'll be going back there again this year, and hopefully to Nantucket as well.
I think we're going to definitely carve out some time for that.
Absolutely.
Because Nantucket plays in a lot with whaling. That was really the hotbed and home of whaling until New Bedford took the crown again during that golden age between 1820 and 1850s. You know, just to give you a little preview of what we're going to be doing here coming up, we're going to be taking the week off next week because we have some commitments.
Yep.
But we're going to come back strong after that. It's not going to be the traditional podcast, I don't think.
No.
We're going to have some new voices coming in.
Yes, it'll be a different format podcast, but I still think we should maybe that Sunday also try and do this podcast.
I think we could do both.
I don't see why
There's
not.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah. And so that's going to be exciting. We haven't exactly nailed down a name, but it's going to be a little different than just our straight-up gentlemanly confabulation.
Correct.
And then, you know, mark this down in your calendars. In April, we're going to be doing a Civil War podcast.
Yeah, and your father will be here.
He's already confirmed. We're going to actually have to move it out of my shed and have it in his shed.
Because it's a bigger shed.
It is. And you know, this is a fine for two people. We need a little more room.
Yes. It is going to be a great podcast. You guys are going to learn a lot about the Civil War. I'm excited for it.
Well, look, we're going to be lucky if we keep it the same kind of length that these are.
Yes.
It may be a little...
It's probably going to be like a two-part.
We may have to cut it into two.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. We love content.
Fantastic.
John, a pleasure as always, my friend. The bee sting, fantastic. The cigars, fantastic. The talk about American history and the importance of whaling, something really more people should know about.
Yep. Guys, go check out the Whaling Museum.
And as always, we want to encourage you, check out all the content on gentsconfab.com. Across our social media profiles on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, if you want to check out what we're drinking and smoking.
True.
Gents Confab. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you later.